All right, I think we can get started. It's 8:31, and I don't want to take any time away from our guest speaker tonight. It's a pleasure to welcome Noah Notis, and back in Manhattan, grew up in Allentown. Nice to see his father online. And Noah is a studied grew up in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Studied for 2 years in Yeshiva at Har Etzion, graduated from Princeton University, and is now, as much as it may be hard to say, is doing a PhD in plasma physics at Columbia University. I guess he hasn't been on campus for a while, but that's because he was in Toronto for Pesach, and it's a pleasure to welcome him. And he lives with his wife and daughter, our granddaughter, in Manhattan. So, Vakasha, Noah, it's all yours.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak. It's always fun to learn a little bit together. Although I'll admit the Zoom format is going to be a little bit difficult to gauge everybody's reactions and where everybody is at. I think, though, the policy of Torah in Motion is not to interrupt or call out in the middle. So if I say something really offensive, you'll have to save it for the end. But I don't plan on it. So that's okay. Okay. We already broke the rule. Okay, so we're going to talk about Parshat Acharei Mod this week. There are three basic sections of the... Here, I'll share my screen. The sources were sent out. Thank you so much. Can everybody see my screen?
Yes.
Great. Okay, so basically there are three sections. Okay, oftentimes when we learn Chumash, it's important to pay attention to the organization of the Torah. And it's some of the most interesting, but also some of the sometimes the most baffling things to try to figure out are what is placed where and why. So just, you know, by way of example, we'll go through all of Chumash. Okay, maybe we'll go through part of Chumash and talk about it. So Bereishit is basically chronological, but there are some... there are some insertions that are a little bit hard to understand, or maybe non-chronological. So, for example, the story of Yehuda and Tamar, or the story of the Edomite kings in Parsha V'yishlach. So sometimes we take a break from chronology to understand, to go on a tangent or whatever. Other times, the organization is thematic. So Sefer Vayikra starts in... Parshat Vayikra is basically just a list of korbanot. Makes a lot of sense, organizationally a good principle. And with each korban, the Torah describes how to do that korban. Parshat Tzav continues the that theme. Also, basically going through the korbanot and describing which what halachot, what laws apply to each. But then we pivot in the middle of Parshat Tzav and start talking about the Miluim, the inauguration period of the Mishkan, of the Tabernacle. We continue that through Parshat Shmini, which is the eighth day of the inauguration period, which ended in tragedy. And then the Torah, which is the Miluim, the inauguration, is really a continuation of Sefer Shmot. So we're sort of skipping and hopping. Then we pivot again to talk about the Tumen Torah laws, what you can eat, what you can't eat. And we continue that until the beginning of this week's Parsha, where we pick up the, what may be like a narrative or thematic thread we were talking about, we finished in, which we interrupted to talk about what you can eat, what you can't eat, and the Tumen Torah laws. So we pick up that with Acharei Mot Shnei Bnei Aaron. After the two sons of Aaron died, so the Torah discusses something that's totally new and unrelated to that, the laws of the sacrifices on Yom Kippur. Which basically the point is, Bnei Aaron died for something that they did that wasn't planned in the Mishkan. So Avoda Yom Kippurim is all about the procedures. How can the Kohen Gadol approach Hashem in the Mishkan and enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim? So then that's the first basic section in this week's Parsha, is the Yom Kippur service. It's the part that nobody pays attention to on Yom Kippur. It's like half of Masa, and everybody is tired at that point, haven't slept yet, so we tune out for a little bit. But that's what's happening then. So that's the first part in Ocarina Mode. The second part we're gonna skip for now. That's gonna be the main point of our shiur, is to discuss those laws, is the second part. And then the third part is the Arayot. That's the second half of Yom Kippur. The part that also nobody pays attention to. It's just the introduction to Sefer Yonah. The third part of Achrimot is the Arayot. Those are the forbidden sexual relationships. And that's a whole different topic. Why we read that on Yom Kippur? Not for now. It's very simple, parsha. Three distinct topics. Yom Kippur, Arayot, and in the middle we have a bunch of mitzvahs that we don't really understand. So it's like perfect organization. So we're gonna try going through a little some of the mitzvot in the second section, and we'll see that it is indeed a distinct section, and we'll try to talk about some of those mitzvot. The shiur is by nature gonna be a little bit disjointed because it's a bunch of disjointed mitzvot, but hopefully there's gonna be some thread that runs through everything that can help us understand it all. But so far, so the in this beautifully color-coded second section, so I call it the Ish Ish Mitzvot, not because it has anything to do with men. Ish Ish is like an idiom for everyone. There are four distinct mitzvot in this second section of Parshat Achrimot, and you can see they're color coded over here. There's green, blue, red, and purple. Apologies to those who are colorblind, but you could see that they're each is the introduction to each section, and it's one parsha in the Torah. So oftentimes, it's hard to see when you're not looking at a Sefer Torah, but the Torah has paragraph breaks. It's called Parsha Ptucha, an open parsha. So if the line ends and then there's like a gap to the end of the line, and a parsha stuma, which is a paragraph break that's like words, and in the middle there's a gap. So you can see that this whole section really is one section. At the end we have this pei. This pei means parsha ptucha. So there's a paragraph break at the very end. Throughout the whole section, there's no other paragraph break. It starts with Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'amor. That's an introduction. There's a second introductory pasuk, and if that's not enough to convince you that this is all one section, each of these mitzvot start with the words ish ish, which is not a really common idiom in the Torah, but it's not hard to understand. It just means everyone, and we'll go through each of these four mitzvot just briefly before we discuss them in more detail. And we'll start with number two, because number one's a little harder. So the second mitzvah is the prohibition to bring korbanot outside of the Mishkan. And when I say bring, I mean like build an altar and burn it on the altar. The third mitzvah is the prohibition to eat blood. And the fourth mitzvah is the requirement that when one slaughters a chaya or an oaf, we'll describe what those two words mean in a second. A chaya or an oaf, one has to cover the blood of the slaughtered animal. So let's just take a break, and before we take a break and talk about what chaya and oaf are, and go through some of the mitzvot that apply to different types of animals. So we'll go back to the first section, the first mitzvah, which is a little bit longer, and we'll talk about what it is. We'll just read the second mitzvah first. Va'alehem tomar, and unto the people of Israel say, Ish ish mi beit Yisrael min hager asher agur b'tocham asher ya'aleh ola uzavach. So anyone from the house of Israel or from those who dwell amongst them, converts, that sacrifices an ola or a zavach, different types of sacrifices. And instead of bringing it to the temple, the Mishkan, the person brought it outside of the Mishkan, so they have the punishment of karet. Okay, and note over here, the object of the prohibition is an ola uzavach. Okay, so these two different sacrifices. If we look at the first mitzvah though, what is the object of the mitzvah? So ish mi beit Yisrael, so anyone from the house of Israel, asher yishchat, who slaughters. So over here, it's not ya'aleh, not to ha'alah is like burning it on an altar, but over here it's asher yishchat, one who slaughters. Shor o chesab o eiz v'machane. O asher yishchat mi chutz l'machane. So if one slaughters shor, chesab, and eiz, so that's a cow, a sheep, or a goat, in the machane, in the camp, or outside of the camp. V'al petach o el mo'ed lo hevi'o, lakriv korban l'Hashem, lifnei mishkan Hashem, it's as if you've spilled blood. If instead of slaughtering the animal, making it into a korban at the Mishkan, if instead you slaughter it outside of the Mishkan. So there's a dispute exactly what kinds of cows, sheep, and goats are we talking about over here. So if you note, we'll do the like simpler interpretation first. So note the contrast. The object of the first mitzvah is shor, kesev, and eiz, a cow, a sheep, or a goat. As opposed to the second mitzvah, the prohibition, the object of the prohibition is ola uzavach, somebody who slaughters, somebody who offers these types of sacrifices. So it implies that the first mitzvah is talking about not sacrificial animals, but just normal animals to eat. So what the first mitzvah would then be saying is that it's prohibited to slaughter animals, just like animals to eat, outside of the Mishkan. The implication would be that in the desert, the Jewish people have to consecrate any animal or any cow, sheep, or goat that they're going to eat and bring it as a sacrifice. In Chazal, in the Gemara, there's another way of understanding the first mitzvah. And that's to say, it's really just the same exact object that the second mitzvah is prohibiting. It's really Olah Uzavach, but the Torah uses the word Shor, Kesev, and Eiz, the cow, sheep, or goat, to refer to those korbanot, because korbanot can only come from those animals. So it's then what would be the first, like what would the first mitzvah be prohibiting then? It'll be prohibiting even just slaughtering a korban, a sacrifice outside of the Mishkan. So that, again, just to recap, the two different ways of understanding the first mitzvah is either that just like in the second mitzvah, how there's a prohibition to offer up a korban outside of the Mishkan, the first mitzvah is saying there's even a prohibition to slaughter a korban outside of the Mishkan. The second way, and maybe the more interesting way of understanding the first mitzvah, is to say that there's a prohibition of slaughtering these types of animals as chulin is the rabbinic word for it, as just meat to be eaten. So your Friday night, you know, I don't know what people are eating Friday night. I'm not eating meat, but your Friday night steak, you know, if that's something that you do. So that type of Friday night steak, they weren't able to have that. In the desert, any meat that they would eat would have to be consecrated as a korban. So just to recap these four mitzvot. So the first mitzvah, either a prohibition of eating unconsecrated or slaughtering unconsecrated meat in the desert or slaughtering korbanot outside of the Mishkan. The second mitzvah, a prohibition of offering up korbanot outside of the Mishkan. The third mitzvah is a prohibition to eat blood. And the fourth mitzvah is the requirement when one slaughters an undomesticated animal or an undomesticated bird, or just a bird, the requirement to cover the blood of the slaughtered animal. And this is a great opportunity to reflect on all of the many mitzvot that apply to animals. We're going to focus on two things from this parsha throughout the rest of the shiur. So the first thing that we're going to focus on is the prohibition of dam, the prohibition of eating blood. And the second thing that we're going to, you know, through maybe the way that we're going to focus on that prohibition is by looking at the first mitzvah. The first mitzvah describes, according to the second interpretation, which is that you can't have your Friday night steak in the desert. When the Jews were in the desert, they couldn't have Friday night steaks. any steak that they would have to be a sacrifice, describes that, it implies that the permission to eat meat is actually a dynamic one, and it changes over time. And we're going to trace that change over time through a bunch of psukim and some gemaras, and we will hopefully come to appreciate the Torah's perspective on animals eating meat. This is a high order, tall order. We're definitely not going to fill it, but it'll be a taster, no pun intended. Okay, so that is end of section one of the shiur. So let us recap some. I'm going to skip to page three. So let's just recap some. What are the different types of animals in halacha? Okay, this is going to be a little hard to get it all on the page. So what are some of the types of animals in halacha, and what are the mitzvot that apply to each of them? So as I said earlier, this is just going to help situate us with what we're even talking about over here. I said earlier, we're going to talk about specifically the prohibition of eating blood. And we're also going to talk about just in general, the permission of eating meat. So we'll have that as shechita. Okay, so we're going to focus on blood and the permission to eat meat, which we'll just, have as shechita. So there are three basic types of edible. Okay, I'm excluding fish and grasshoppers from this chart entirely. But there are three basic types of edible animals, excluding fish and grasshoppers, in halacha. So there are mammals and there are avians. So mammals and birds. Behema, is basically it's a cow, sheep, or a goat. It's basically animals that can be brought as korbanot. So they also have a bunch of halachot that apply to them, even when they're not brought as korbanot. Chaya is undomesticated animals, which in practice is basically just deer or things with horn, with antlers that sprawl. But probably is also like bison and giraffe, but nobody would say that lahalacha. I don't know, maybe nobody. Some people might. And oaf, oaf is flying things, so birds. So let's take a look at some of the mitzvot on this Venn diagram, and it will help us understand that it's actually kind of interesting to think about all of these mitzvot and why they might apply to the subsets of animals that they apply to. So the first one is kind of easy. So that's the prohibition of chilev. So chilev is a bunch of fats that are on the abdominal fats surrounding the internal organs of cows, sheep, and goats. And the question is, why does it only apply to behemah? I can eat chilev from a chaya or an oaf. I can eat abdominal fat from a deer or from a chicken, and it's totally fine. So why does it only apply to cows, sheep, and goats? So basically, the reason is pretty clear, because chilev is brought as a is part of the animal that's brought as a korban on the mizbeach. So it's prohibited all the time, even when I don't bring. It's like kind of defined as God's part of the animal, even when I don't bring it on the mizbeach. So it's still going to be prohibited. Okay, so the second one's a little harder to understand. So basar b'challav, so meat and milk on the Torah level only applies to behemah tahora. It only applies to the cows, sheep, and goats, which is confusing because there are other permitted animals like deer that do lactate. So why wouldn't basar b'challav apply to them? That's a different shear and something different to ponder. Otovet beno. So there's a prohibition to slaughter a mother and the child animal on the same day. So that also only applies to behemah. It only applies to cows, sheep, and goats. And I just had the fourth one, zvachim. So korbanot. So korbanot sacrifices are brought from cows, sheep, and goats. And maybe that lends some understanding to the other mitzvot that apply specifically to them. Okay, so then what's the intersection between behema and chaya, between cows, sheep, and goats, and things like deer, etc. So the intersection between them is gid hanasha. It's a mitzvah that doesn't really have to do with anything. It's its own mitzvah. The prohibition to eat the sciatic nerve, or a bunch of gidim, sort of inedible things that run through the leg. Why is that prohibited? Okay, you have to look and see for Bereishit for that. Why is it only behema and chaya? Well, because the Gemara says that only the legs of those mammals are similar to they have a kaf, which is like a muscular thing on top of the thigh. So it's just anatomically something that would be similar to a human. Okay, so just going through these, situating ourselves in terms of the mitzvot that apply to these animals. So then with oaf, what are mitzvot that apply only to birds? Okay, so it was hard to find one, but the mitzvot that only apply to birds are shiluach hakan, so sending away the mother bird, taking the eggs. And the intersection between chaya and oaf is something in this week's parsha, is kisoy hadam, the requirement to cover the blood. And it's interesting to think about why that might be. And we might get to discussing it. And then the intersection of all the types of categories is the prohibition of eating blood, eating dam, the requirement to do shechita, to kill the animal in a particular way, through cutting the trachea and esophagus, and the prohibition of taking a limb off the animal and eating it, taking the limb off the animal while it's still alive. And we'll note here, and we'll get to discussing this later, we'll note here a sort of incongruency with something I mentioned earlier. So the prohibition of chelev, eating the abdominal fats, only applies to behema. And I said that's because chelev is part of the animal that's brought as a korban. Well, blood is also the part of the animal that's brought as a korban. The kohen accepts the blood and sprinkles it on the mizbeach, or pours it on the mizbeach. So why is blood applicable to things that also aren't brought as korbanot? Deer aren't brought as korbanot. A chicken can't be brought as a korban. And yet, there's the same prohibition of blood, of eating the blood from those animals. So that's going to be something that we'll get to discussing a bit later. My purpose in this was because I like infographics, and also because it's good to see the whole system, and then we'll hone in on the parts that show up in this week's Parsha and the parts that we want to discuss further. So that brings us back. This is sort of also by way of introduction, but if this is the one thing that you take away from this year, then that's golden. That's great. So we're going to go back and discuss the four stages of meat consumption. So I mentioned how the first mitzvah in the middle section of Parshat Achrimot is, according to opinion number two, a prohibition of eating your Friday night steak in the desert. So let's take a look, and I said it implied that actually the permission to eat meat in the Torah is something dynamic. It's something that changes over time. I've isolated over here four stages of permission to eat meat or non-permission thereof in the Torah. The first is the diet of Adam and Chava. What were Adam and Chava eating? If you ever wondered, the Torah tells you. It's apparently very important information because the Torah is pretty sparse. Vayomer Elohim. Elohim said, God said, that's the name of God in Bereishit Aleph. Hine natati lachem et kol esev zorea zera, asher al pnei chol ha'aretz. I've given you all esev, green stuff that produces seed, that kol ha'aretz, asher bo fri'id, zorea zera, lachem yelachla. And I've given you all fruit trees to eat. And you might be able to read this pasuk a little differently, but I'll read it the way that Chazal in the Gemara read it, is that That is what I have also given to Chayat Haaretz, the animals on the land, Ov HaShemayim, the birds that fly, Chol Romeis Haaretz, everything that creeps on the land, anything else that has Nefesh Chaya, I've given them also Yerek Esev, the greenery, to eat as well. So what were Adam and Chava eating? They were eating vegetables and fruit. Sometimes they were eating fruit that they weren't supposed to eat. Okay, so that's stage one in the history of meat consumption, is non-consumption. Okay, I'll note here, and I'm not going to discuss this in detail, wasn't there a prohibition of Eiver Min HaChai for Adam and Chava? Wasn't there a prohibition for them not to eat a living limb? Well, you can only eat a living limb if you're allowed to eat meat in the first place. Okay, so this is a question that bothered some readers of the Gemara, and we're not going to discuss it here. Number two, after the flood story, Noah is told that the world order is going to change. Up until this point, there was like a certain, there was less of a gap between humans and animals, even though Adam and Chava are told that they will rule over, the animal world. Things get a little bit more serious with the Noach story, and I'll read starting from Pasuk Bet, and I'm in source two over here. Umorachem v'chitchem yeah al kol chayat haaretz v'al kol v'ashamayim. Your fear will be upon anything, all other animals, basically. I've given you any into your hands anything that creeps or swims on the land or the water. Okay, pasuk gimel. This is the critical pasuk. Kol remes asher hu chai. Anything that creeps that lives, lachem yelachla. So it'll be yours to eat. Ki yerek esev natatu lachem et kol. Just like the greenery, which I already gave to Adam and Chava to eat, I've given you, Noach, and your descendants, anything that creeps, anything that's alive. Basically, you can eat meat. And Pasuk Dalet limits this. Ach basar b'nafsho damo lo tochelu. But don't eat flesh in its livingness with blood. Okay, this is a little bit of a hard phrase to parse. The way that Chazal understood it in the Gemara is that it's talking about the prohibition of Eiver Min HaChai, the prohibition of eating a living limb, which either was commanded to Adam and Chava originally and reiterated here, or actually, according to the Rambam, wasn't originally commanded to Adam and Chava and is actually innovated to Noach and his descendants over here. Okay, so stage two, after the flood, Noach is allowed to eat meat. Okay, stage three is our parsha. The Jewish people in the desert aren't able to eat cows, sheep, and goats if they're not brought to the Mishkan. And Pasuk Yod, you'll see, also prohibits them from eating blood. Okay, and stage four is once the Jewish people enter the land of Israel, ki archiv Hashem alokacha et gvulcha asher diber lach, v'yam artha uchla basar, ki ta'aven nafshecha lechol basar, v'chlava nafshecha tochal basar. So when the Jewish people enter the land of Israel, and they have a lust for meat, so they should, they're able to eat meat. Kaf Aleph, verse 21, kirchak mimcha makom, and the place of God's dwelling, i.e. Jerusalem, it turned out to be. Okay, this is like a mantra in Sefer Dvarim. The place that God puts his name upon, that's referring to the temple that will ultimately be built. Okay, and what should you do? Because the place of God's dwelling, i.e. the temple, is going to be far away from you. You live in, I don't know, Tel Aviv is pretty close to Yerushalayim, but you live, you know, some far-flung, you live in Akko, some far-flung place, So what are you supposed to do? Every time you want to have steak, you have to go to the temple? That's ridiculous. The vegetarians are laughing right now. Just don't have steak. Okay, but you're hungry, you want to have steak. So what are you supposed to do? So you're just able to shech the animal wherever you are. Kasher tzivitichah. Okay. As I commanded you. And you can eat it as you desire in any of your gates. That's also like a dvarim word for any of your cities. Okay. Ach kasher yachel ratzvivat hayal kein Okay. Great. Okay. Pasuk Kav Gimel. So then we reiterate the prohibition of eating the blood again. Rak chazak levilchiachu adam ki adam hu hanefesh v'lo tochal hanefesh im habasar. Okay. But you can't eat blood. Don't eat the nefesh, which is the blood. Blood is like the soul. It's something that circulates throughout the body. It's like animating the movements, and it can't really be seen, but it's sort of everywhere. So blood is like the soul. Don't eat the blood with the basar. Lo tochlenu, don't eat the blood. Okay, it's apparently really important not to eat the blood. You have to be like strong, not eat the blood. We have like a bunch of psukim over here. So kav dalet lo tochlenu al eretz yishpechenu kamayim. Don't eat it, pour it on the ground like water. Lo tochlenu, don't eat the blood. We've repeated a bunch of times already. Lamani tav l'chal v'nacha acharecha, so that it will be good for you and your descendants. Ki ta'aseh yashar b'nei Hashem. When you do what is good in the eyes of God. Okay. So just want to recap. There are four stages over here. There's Adam and Chava, prohibited from eating any animal products, eating meat. There's stage two, Noach, the world order changes. Noach and his descendants are now allowed to eat meat. In our parsha, Achrimot, there's a prohibition of eating specifically behema, shor, kesev, and ease, and that's not shlamim if it's not brought as a sacrifice. And stage four is once the Jewish people enter the land of Israel, they're again able to just slaughter these korban type animals for their own purposes to eat. And I want to draw attention here to a really important thing, which is that at every stage where people are actually allowed to eat meat, okay, excluding stage one, because that doesn't count, that's the non-function. But at every stage of permission or limitation or expansion, the prohibition involving dam and nefesh is reiterated. So with Noah, there's the allowance to eat meat, and then there is sort of step back, but don't do this thing. And what's this thing? Okay, so it's something involving blood. The way Chazal understand it is don't eat the living limb. As we'll see later, Ramban understands that eating a living limb is really like a more extreme version of the prohibition of dam. Not only are you eating the lifeblood, you're actually like eating a limb like while it's still, taken from a living thing, right? You're eating it while it's like very much alive. The Jewish people are limited from slaughtering these animals as food in the desert. Don't eat blood. Don't do it. And finally, when we are again allowed to eat shor, kesev, and ease, to eat these animals not as sacrifices, but just as a basar tava, so just meat for general consumption. So again, there's this like four pasuk, there's a three pasuk long exhortation from the Torah, don't eat blood, don't do it. And that's going to be an important piece in understanding what the prohibition of dam is in the Torah's perspective on eating meat. Okay. So This we did. This we did. Okay, this we also did. Okay, so let's just take a look at specifically in our parsha and Achrei Mot. So there's sort of one way of reading these prohibitions, which is we have the Avodat Yom HaKippurim, which is basically the way that you approach God in the most intense, intimate way on Yom Kippur, entering the Kodesh Kodashim. It is achievable. Don't get that impression because the sons of Aaron were killed for trying to do it. It is achievable. You just have to do it in the right way, under the right circumstances. There are those who read this parsha of the Avodah Yom HaKippurim is really not about Yom Kippur. It's really just about whenever the Kohen Gadol, whenever Aaron wanted to enter the Kodesh HaKodashim, he was able to do it. He just had to do this process. And then Ledorot, in our times, later times, it's specifically limited to Yom Kippur. But basically, it's saying it's achievable. You're able to approach God in the Kodesh HaKodashim. You just have to do it in the right way. Then our section two, is describing all the opposite problem, of it's so hard, to approach God in the Mishkan. So let's do it everywhere. Let's sacrifice, on Bamot. Let's sacrifice outside the temple. The first mitzvah in that understanding would be people would sort of be like limitation of it's dangerous to sacrifice these types of animals, even as food. It's dangerous to sacrifice them outside of the Mishkan, because people might have the desire to bring sacrifices, and so we prohibit that entirely. And the prohibition of dam and the requirement to cover the blood would also be something that you understand in this way as well. It's relating to idolatry. It's relating to sacrificing outside of the temple, seeking. It's hard to approach God in the way that Yom Kippur requires. So let's try to have other outlets. Okay, and this is how the Rambam understands the prohibition of eating this non-sacrificial meat in the desert. And I'll read it in the translation. Because I can't read Arabic. Okay, so know that the meat of desire is only forbidden in the desert. For it was one of the generally accepted opinions that the jinn, okay, that's the shadim, the demons, lived in deserts and held converse and appeared there, but did not appear in cities and cultivated places. So that whenever a townsman wished to do something in the ways of this insanity, the Rambam doesn't spare mean words for practices in Avodah Zarah. Okay. He had to go from the city to the desert and to isolated places. Therefore, the meat of desire became permitted after the entry into the land of Canaan. Also, because indubitably the strength of that malady had diminished and the number of followers of those opinions had become less. So there's that arc of improvement that's there in the Rambam's understanding of Korbanot. Korbanot are something to and It's something to wean the Jewish people off of Avodah Zarah, off of idolatry. So specifically in the desert, while we're still in that process of being weaned off idolatrous practices, it's important to prohibit sacrificing these animals in anybody's backyard, even just for personal consumption. And there are different ways of saying this. There's the Sur Mirah. There's the negative way of saying it, and there's the Aseh Tov positive way of saying it. It can either be, don't bring, these animals, don't sacrifice these, don't slaughter these animals for personal consumption. Rather, bring them in the temple. It's an opportunity for closeness. The Midbar was a time period when the Jewish people lived very close to the Mishkan, so they are able to take that opportunity to bring the Korbanot. Alternatively, there's the Sur Mirah. There's the negative way of reading it, which is the way that the Rambam read it. Don't slaughter these animals even for personal consumption. In the desert, because it's dangerous, you might revert to your evil ways of idolatrous practices. Okay. And the idolatry is definitely something that is present in the psukim. Let's see. The lo yisbechu oded las yirim asher him zonim achareihem. So the prohibition of slaughtering these animals, even for personal consumption, is connected with the fear that the Jewish people are going to revert to slaughtering animals to the seirim, which are kinds of, demons or whatever. It's basically idolatry. So that's the concern. That's the concern. And okay, let's move on. And in the Rambam's view, blood, which is also in the Parsha, is that same exact concern. The Rambam, and this is and opening a whole can of worms about mitzvah explanation in general, and about mitzvah explanation in the Mor Nevuchim, Rambam's Guide for the Perplexed, in particular, which is that the Rambam, and this is something he was criticized by a lot of people for, in the Mor Nevuchim, although he does not do this in the Mishnah Torah, in his code of Jewish law, the Rambam uses historical explanations to try to motivate mitzvot. For the Rambam, the worst thing possible is an unmotivated mitzvah. God doesn't give us things for no reason. Chukim are not things that don't have any reason. Chukim are mitzvot that we don't understand the reason yet. Perhaps with the proper historical background, we would understand the reason. That's how the Rambam got to giving historical reasons. So the Rambam read through all these idolatry pamphlets, book of, this, book of that, things that probably weren't preserved, and looked through them to try to understand where these mitzvot might be coming from. So the Rambam came to the conclusion that the prohibition of dam, of eating blood, was also connected with idolatry. People would sacrifice an animal and make a pool of the blood and surround it. So that's why we can't eat blood. But we also want to show that that's ridiculous. So we specifically bring the blood on the Mizbeach, and we cover blood to try to prevent people from doing that. So the Rambam understood that this whole parsha is all about preventing idolatry, focusing the sacrificial worship on the Mishkan, and perhaps that's why when we enter Eretz Yisrael, these mitzvot become, the first mitzvah at least, becomes irrelevant. It's no longer a concern. The Jewish people have undergone their, full conversion to Mishkan-centric, Mikdash-centric Judaism. And it's not a worry anymore. The Ramban, and with this, we're going to finish off, but it's a little long, so it'll take us a little while to finish off. The Ramban took issue with the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam in the guides' understanding of the prohibition of blood. And there are two passages in the Ramban, in Nachmanides, that we're going to focus on. So the first one is from this week's Parsha, and the second one is from the earliest pasuk that we saw describing the prohibition of Adam HaRishon from eating meat. And the Ramban presents the Rambam's understanding in the Mor Nevuchim of the prohibition of blood. It's connected to idolatrous practices. And he says, basically, based on our parsha, it makes a lot of sense. It's connected with the first prohibition, which is about preventing the Jewish people from sacrificing to the Seirim from the demons. It's all brought in the same parsha. It makes a lot of sense to read the prohibition of dam as based on a concern for idolatry. There's even the Rambam points to use of a specific phrase that only comes up in in two places, our mitzvah of dam and a prohibition of a type of avodah zarah, a type of idolatry, indicating that the concern of the prohibition of dam is all about a concern for idolatry. You know, and perhaps this can also explain explain why, in all the context of meat discussion, stage two, stage three, and stage four, the Torah also has to mention the prohibition of dam. Also has to mention the prohibition of blood, you know, living limbs. Maybe these are things connected with idolatry. Ultimately, though, the Ramban, reading mostly Parshat Re'eh, the third example from Sefer Dvarim, when meat was totally permitted with Shechita, the Ramban, reading mostly that pasuk, understands that there's something else that's happening. There's something else that's going on here. And he thinks that the prohibition of dam, the prohibition of blood, is really connected with the recognition that animals have certain qualities to them that are very human-like, and maybe indicate that they're not just something to be eaten with no recognition of that at all. And there are a couple of phrases here that I really like. And I think are good takeaway phrases. So, for example, what are some qualities that the Ramban, that Nachmanides thought made animals similar to humans, thinking beings that deserved a little bit more, more than just being eaten? So, ulekach yesh ba dea livroach min hanezek. So animals have the ability to flee from harm. And animals have the ability to go after things that please them. The heker barigilim. Animals recognize people or other animals that they relate to frequently. The ahavalahem. And they even love. Ka'avad haklavim l'baleihem. Like how dogs love their masters. V'heker mufla v'anshei beit ba'aleihem. Animals have like a incredible recognition of the people in their households. So basically, recognition of these qualities pushes the Ramban to explain something different. That what is the prohibition of eating blood rooted in? The prohibition of eating blood is rooted in the recognition ki ein labal, or the principle ki ein labal nefesh sheyochal nefesh. It's basically like a moral rule for the Ramban that one person who has a nefesh, who has a soul, shouldn't eat another soul. Kian, and why is that? It's basically because of a non-permission. Ki hanefashot kulan la'el, because all souls belong to God. And basically, it's saying that why is dam, why is blood prohibited? Because blood is the soul, and people who are themselves bearers of souls cannot eat other souls. They can't eat other nefashot because you don't own it. It's not yours to eat. Fine, the meat was given to you, but the nefesh doesn't belong to you. The nefesh belongs to God, and as like a proof text to this, he quotes a pasuk in Kohelet, "Hinei k'nefesh ha'adam u'k'nefesh ha'be'imalo," that both nefesh of people and nefesh of behema, of animals, belong to God. And I think it makes a lot of sense to read the prohibitions in this way. There's another, you know, which is basically gives us, you know, explains to us why at every juncture of discussing the prohibition of meat, it's important to, you know, it's important to reiterate the prohibition of dam, which is saying you can eat meat, just don't eat the nefesh, don't eat the soul, which is basically the realization that animals they're not packaged meat, they're animals. And what it means to be an animal is it means to have a nefesh that belongs to Hashem and not a nefesh that belongs to people. And the Ramban gives a different explanation as well. And his other explanation is Min HaYadua Od, which is it is also known. That something which is eaten is sort of assimilates into the body of the person who eats it. Basically a you are what you eat kind of principle. Which is basically by eating animal blood, by eating the nefesh of another animal, the person will take on properties of that animal. And a person will like take on certain qualities of the nature of the animal that he eats. And I think you can maybe reject the science or not accept the science, but also recognize what the Ramban is saying over here. That as people, we assimilate the things that we eat into our bodies. And we have to be careful about that. And what we put into our bodies says a lot about what we think about the stuff we're putting into our bodies. Eating meat, maybe in this understanding, is sort of like putting humans on the level of animals. Explanation one was more like, we don't want to eat the nefesh because it's recognizing that animals do have a nefesh. And explanation number two is more like, be careful with eating animals because it puts people on the same food chain as animals. So these two explanations of the Ramban, I think reframe the prohibition of dam from what the Rambam was explaining. Dam is all about recognizing the nefesh that exists in animals, and it's really easy to understand why that wasn't originally prohibited to Adam. Why was it allowed to Noah? So this is a problem that the Ramban addresses, and the Ramban thinks it's based on either the animal life had done evil and sort of like decreased its value, or maybe it was like a reward to Noah. Noah gained mastery over the animal world because the whole world was saved because of him. And I think I'd like to finish off with a story, which I think is a really cool story. So it's a story in Bava Metzia. So it's also maybe a bit of a famous story. So the Rebbe, so the Gemara is talking all about the different Yisurim, different terrible things that had happened to different rabbis and why. So Al Yidei Ma'aseh Ba'u V'Al Yidei Ma'aseh Halchu. So the Yisurim, the bad things that happened to Rebbe came upon him because of a Maisa, something he did, and they left him because of a Maisa, because of something that he did. Okay, so what was the Maisa that he did that brought the Yisurim, that brought the bad, terrible things upon him? Dehahu Egla, Dehahu Kamamtu Leilishchita. So there was a calf that they were bringing to the slaughter. Azal Talya Reshe Bekanfe de Rebbe. And the calf nuzzled up to Rebbe. Basically asked not to be slaughtered, vikabachi, and the animal cried. So Amarle, zeal lekachnutzarta. So Rebbe, in any good shochet fashion, said to the animal, "Go, I'm not having rachmanis on you. You were created for exactly this purpose." So Amre, so they said, maybe describing what happened in Shemayim, poyel v'lo kamerachim leitu ale yisurin. So because Rebbe showed a lack of mercy on this animal, so he should be subject to these painful, experiences. And through an action, through a good deed that he did, the Yisurim also vanished. Yom achad hava kakansha amte de Rebbe beita. So one day, the Rebbe's maid was cleaning the house. Hava shadia b'nei karkoshta v'kakansha lehu. So, and she was throwing out the weasels. Samar la shavkinu. So Rebbe said, leave the animals, leave the, he even showed tshuva gemura. He even did a lot better. He left the pests in the house. K'tiv v'rachma. So the pasuk says that God's mercy is upon all his beings. So Amru is now describing again what's happening in Shemayim. Because Rebbe showed Rachamim, let us have mercy upon him too, and his Yisurim stopped. So it's an interesting story, but also it also agrees maybe with what the Ramban was saying with the prohibition of dam, with the prohibition of blood, is all about recognizing the nefesh that exists in animals as well. Okay, so there's obviously a lot more to talk about, and hopefully this is good material for the Parsha, and just as we show rachamim to the animals, Hashem should also show rachamim to us. And Shabbat Shalom. Any questions, feel free to ask now.
Thank you. Thank you. You can unshare your screen. There we go. Thank you. Okay. Yashikoach. One question in the chat box, unless somebody wants to orally ask some questions. No,
What
you
did you
see.
say? What did you say that the Avodah Zarah next did with the blood, that it has to be covered?
Yeah, so the Rambam thought there was like a practice to sacrifice blood and leave it in a pit, and then the demons would come at night, and hang around the pit, and you'd be able to converse with the demons. So the Rambam thought that the requirement to cover blood is due to that. There are
Did Rambam not believe in demons?
He believed that people believed in demons.
So the Torah was talking to a false belief because people believed in it.
Right. Yeah, I think that's how you'd say it.
That's a
And
little bit of a stretch, no?
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
You wouldn't be the first person to disagree with the Rambam, Mor Nebuchim. And
Right.
there are obviously other ways of understanding Kisui Adam. So some take it in the direction of dam, blood is something that we can't eat. So we don't want to collect it in a vessel. We want to cover it, make it inaccessible. There's also midrashim that point to blood, kisui adam, as almost like a kind of burial for the animal. So the birds, the midrash explained, the birds cover the blood of hevel. So we in turn want to cover the blood of the birds. So there are different ways of understanding it. It's a very interesting mitzvah.
Thank you. Beautiful shiur. Very lamdish.
Right. Okay. Thank you. I forgot to mention when I introduced Noah that he recently got a Kabbalah in Shechita. So if anybody would like to have their chicken shechted, he doesn't do it as a, on a professional basis, but he's smiling now and he will shecht chickens, I think. If you come to Washington Heights, I don't know. But anyways, so really thank you for it's really it is a part of the parsha nobody pays attention to, like you said at the beginning, and
Yeah.
the middle part. And anyway, but thank you very much, Yasher Koach. Okay, next week. Okay, tomorrow morning, my shiur continues on the Siddur, back to the Siddur. We're still in the first bracha of the Shmoneh Esrei. That's at 9:15 tomorrow morning. Sunday, we're back to sort of our regular schedule, Rabbi Liebtag and Bene Gesundheit. And on Monday, Mark Shapiro at night. Monday afternoon, we are starting a new series. Rabbi Chaim Angel will be giving a series on the Torah readings relating to Chag HaShavuot. He's really a wonderful teacher. He spoke for us on our Purim Yom Iyun, and everybody is, if you haven't signed up yet, please do so. But we'll have basically a regular shiur picking up next week. And like I said, hope everybody had a nice, inspiring, peaceful Pesach, and we should hear good things. And okay, Laila Tov, everybody, and Shabbat Shalom. And thank you very much, Noah, and regards, and Laila Tov. And we'll hope to learn with you again in the not too distant future. We'll keep you on your toes a little bit. Okay, there you go. Very nice. Okay, and okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the terrific shiur. A great
Thank
grace of
you. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.